All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is October 23rd, 2025. And our top story this morning, well, we got two of them. First one, the price of oil is ripping. Not really expecting that one, but there it is. More than $3 a barrel higher. That's for both WTI and Brent crude oil on new U.S. sanctions against Russian oil companies. They're targeting Rosneft and Lukoil are the two big Russian outfits that are being targeted here. Now, these sanctions were announced yesterday, and you know, this is all coming amid stories of a supply glut, right? About OPEC plus increasing production, about how U.S. producers just keep on pumping more and more. Oil prices were way down. We were in the 50s for a while there. Stories about oil sitting in tankers at sea, almost 2 billion barrels, I think, or was it 1.2 billion barrels? Don't quote me on the number, but there's a lot of oil sitting in tankers at sea that hasn't been sold yet. People are worried about lower prices. All of a sudden, we got new sanctions on Russia, and oil prices are ripping. Now, the big question is, are these sanctions going to be effective? Because Russian oil exports haven't really been that dramatically affected by the sanctions to date, right? I mean, there have been some economic consequences. They're having to sell at lower prices, things like that. But the Russians have still been able to sell their oil as the world has been trying to put pressure on the country to stop the war in Ukraine. So there's big questions about the effectiveness here. The market is saying these are going to be effective. A $3 per barrel increase in the price of oil, is the market taking this seriously? I'm kind of struggling with that, to be honest with you, just because I've seen these prior sanctions be largely ineffective, but the market disagrees this morning. Now, the big question here is going to be also India. We've finally got a little bit of a glimmer of hope with the trade negotiations with the Indians recently. President Trump was saying he had a great big beautiful phone call with Prime Minister Modi, and that they discussed the gradual drawdown of Indian purchases of Russian oil. The Indians didn't confirm that. President Trump is prone to just kind of spouting off things, as we know. So we never really confirmed that. But the market is saying these sanctions may kind of force India into that boat. Again, we just have to wait and see. But I would also add that this move to sanction Rosneft and Lukoil coincides yesterday with the U.S. restricting the Ukrainians' use of long-range missiles for strikes inside Russia. And it's possible that oil is also reacting to that, because the Ukrainians have been very effective with drones, which are lower and slower moving, much easier to shoot down. And yet these drone attacks have been highly effective against Russian refineries recently. So if long-range missiles are on the table, it's reasonable to assume at least some of those would get through, possibly targeting Russian oil infrastructure. And so maybe the market is reacting to those two stories at the same time. Now, the other big one going on this morning, we have got several more of these isolated events. And I just want to reassure everybody that it's totally a coincidence that these things keep happening one after another, after another, after another. Totally unrelated. Definitely no slow boiling credit crisis slowly rising to the surface or anything like that, right? We talked yesterday about Primalend and how that was number three after First Brands and Tricolor. Well, this morning we've got a couple of these, and I had to go hunting for these on X and on Twitter, but some of the accounts that I follow were all over this one. First one, Eagle Bank Corp. Shout out to Kristen Shaughnessy on X, who had this one. They're taking a big loss on commercial real estate loans, about a $68 million loss for Eagle Bank Corp. Doesn't seem like a huge number, but this is not a very big bank. That's about 10% of their capital all wiped out in one shot there, and it's because of commercial real estate loans. You know, we're not really hearing that much, or we haven't heard much about commercial real estate for the last year and a half or so. All of a sudden, we're seeing a few of these stories starting to come up now. And, you know, we've all been looking at the commercial real estate story, scratching our heads. We know these buildings are not worth what everybody says they're worth, because we can see them selling in some cases for single digit percentages of what they sold for before the VID. And yet the hits to the banks haven't really happened yet. Well, Eagle Bank Corp is taking their turn, taking a big hit this morning. That stock is down. Now, we've also got Lloyd's of London, big outfit, big insurance and banking outfit out of the UK. Their third quarter profits dropped by 36% on a $1 billion hit due to this. They're calling this a finance scandal in the UK. I've seen a few versions of this story. They're talking about missold cars. Honestly, I haven't tracked this story that close, but it seems like the UK government has told people, like, basically, all right, everybody took out these car loans in 21, 2, and 3. We all know nobody could afford them. We all know the interest rates were too high and that the prices were too high, but people were borrowing anyway because they were flush with stimmy cash. And it looks like the UK is now saying, oh, those cars, they were missold. Wink, wink. Somebody please tell me, what the flip is a missold car? Is that not to be confused with Mr. Sold Car? I'm sorry. Is it like the name of the dealership? I don't freaking know. But Lloyd's, apparently they're basically saying these loans are null and void, and I guess people don't have to pay them back. Lloyd's taking a $1 billion hit due to that one. We've got another story. I freaking love this one. Anthelion. Anthelion, over the summer, they were bragging about their chatbot that runs their CLO investment book. Okay, that's great. What's the worst thing that could happen? Apparently, this chatbot was very good at looking for red flags and nuances and things that, you know, we lame brain humans are not possible or not capable of spotting ourselves. Well, apparently the chatbot took a look at First Brand's loans and said, yep, let's buy a few million bucks of that. So Anthelion taking a big loss in their CLO loan book because their chatbot bought First Brand's. Oh, I just love that story. We've got more banks are suing Andrew Stupin, who is this career scumbag from Southern California who caused a big blow up last week with Zions Bank and Western Alliance due to fraud and double pledging of collateral involving commercial real estate. Oh, there's another one of those isolated events. Well, now we've got more banks are suing him. We've got Enterprise Bank and Trust, Nano Bank, and Bank of California are joining Zions Bank and Western Alliance. So there's five banks that are affected by that isolated event, which is the third of five now, third of six, but who's counting? And we got another crazy story. This bankrupt telecom company, I think they're out of New York. Shout out to FC Nightingale, who posted this one. This bankrupt telecom company, Carrix Capital, went bankrupt after receivables fraud. Apparently, they created fake contracts and fake bills, fake receivables, and I guess they borrowed against those fake contracts. Now the company is bankrupt, listing liabilities of $500 million to $1 billion. That's a big one. That's almost as big as Tricolor. Haven't heard anything about that. So we've got collateral fraud again, this time not in the auto space, in the telecommunications receivables space. What the heck, boy? It's almost like these events are not isolated at all. We've got all of those. Stick around to the end of the show. We go into detail on them. We also got a bunch of earnings today. Tesla earnings. Well, what do we say about Tesla earnings? They sucked. That's what you say. Record revenue. And my Tesla bros were out there on X. Maybe there's a few in the chat. Hey, guys, thanks for the engagement. Everybody was talking big about that record revenue, but whoops, they forgot to make money. Tesla profits down 31% year over year. Guys, I'm told Tesla is a growth company. Maybe that growth company might want to have some growth, or at least some earnings growth. You are valued at over 260 times earnings, and your earnings are going down. That's wrong. But you know what? Forget the math. Guys, math doesn't matter. It's all about my robots. It's all about my robo-taxis, bro. Or at least that's what Elon tried to do on the call yesterday. It's not working. Tesla is down this morning, dragging the NASDAQ lower with it. We also got IBM earnings, which actually were pretty good, but not good enough. IBM stock is down big this morning. Volvo absolutely crushed it. The world's safest cars are apparently very profitable. Look, a lot of job cuts at Volvo. They announced 3,000 layoffs earlier this year. Apparently, it worked. Their earnings were really good, and that stock is up big double digits today. More fallout from Nexperia. Like, oh, great. We had finally some good news in the auto space with Volvo. Nexperia says, you didn't say the magic word. Nexperia is that Chinese-owned auto chip supplier that the Dutch government seized last week. Now we're worried about a chip shortage in Europe because of that, because the Chinese are like, well, you're going to take my company. You can't have my chips. Makes sense. Now Nexperia is warning Japanese automakers that there may not be any chips available for them. And so Japanese automakers may have to stop production now. I have never heard of this company up until last week. I had never heard of Nexperia. Apparently, they are like this vital node in the auto supply chain, and there are consequences and repercussions throughout the world because of what the Dutch government did. It's another problem in the trade war. And in our daily dose of WTF going on this morning, the Trump administration is reportedly in talks to take a stake in quantum computing companies. What the heck? What? Quantum computing? Why? What? Who? I don't know. But apparently a Commerce Department spokesperson came out just a few minutes before we went live and said, no, we're not currently negotiating with any quantum computing companies. Does that mean they took a break and therefore they're not currently negotiating, but they will be again soon? Does that mean they were negotiating before? I don't know. This is all just anonymously sourced crap, according to people familiar with the matter. But we got to talk about that one, guys. Jam-packed show today. Lot to talk about. Let's shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every day. And you may notice on your screen right now is that wonderful number that only ever goes up the U.S. debt clock. And you may notice a 38 handle. The U.S. national debt has crossed $38 trillion. Very short time between 37 and 38 trillion. That was only a couple of weeks, guys. They raised the debt ceiling and they refilled the Treasury General account. And boy, the trillies just keep on coming. Y'all want to do anything about spending? No? Okay, no. How about we just keep the government shut down? And you know, look, the government shut down, guys. This number ain't stopping. It's still going up. So I don't know. Maybe we're just never going to fix this. And that's why I'm not worried about this sell-off in gold over the last few days. So as long as that BS keeps going on, gold is going to keep going higher. Looking over at stocks this morning, we've got the S&P is flat for the day, actually down 3 points, 0.05% lower. We've also got the Dow is modestly red this morning, off about 89 points or 0.19% to the downside. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, down about 0.25%, 54 points lower for the NASDAQ. Tesla having an outsized effect on that one this morning. So we got stocks are down across the board. U.S. dollar, meanwhile, stronger again, 99.02, back with that 99 handle, slightly stronger dollar. Stocks up, dollar up, and we got a lot of things are up this morning. That's kind of interesting. Looking over at yields, we got yields are higher this morning by a decent clip, actually. 30-year Treasury, 4.574. That's higher by 3.5 basis points. The 10-year is at 3.990, higher by almost 4 points. The 2-year is at 3.470. That's higher by about 2.5 points. And the 1-month is at 4.013, up just a fraction of 1 point. We got a little bit of a sell-off in bonds this morning. Looking over at Bitcoin, it's looking better than yesterday, $109,109 as shown on Coinbase. That's up about a grand from yesterday. I kind of figured Bitcoin would sell off a little bit on those Tesla earnings, but it did not. As always, guys, be careful on leverage. Winter is coming. And looking over at the commodities board, green as far as the eye can see. We have got commodities are up pretty much across the board here. Let's start with the metals. Finally taking a break from that brutal two-day sell-off. Spot gold, $4,134. That's higher by 36 bucks or 0.88%. The December gold future is at $41.49, higher by about $84 or 2% higher. Meanwhile, spot silver, $49.28. That's higher by 79 cents or 1.6% higher this morning. The front month December silver contract in New York is at $48.93. That's higher by a buck and a quarter or 2.6%. Good morning for silver. We are looking at that arbitrage, but the difference between the New York and London price is, what do we got here? A little bit more than 30 cents, kind of where it's been for the last few days. That arbitrage opportunity, 30 cents, probably not going to be enough to get the metal to start to keep moving from New York to London. So we'll see if that has any effect on the spot price here. But either way, guys, I like the shiny. Copper is higher by 1.8%. Platinum is higher by 3.6%. Nice move in platinum this morning. Palladium is joining in, up 1.6%. There's that big move in oil here, 5.7% higher for WTI crude oil. $61.87. That's up by $3.38 this morning. Similar move in Brent crude. So let's talk a little bit about what is going on in the oil market here. We've got oil jumps as Trump steps up pressure on Russia with sanctions. Oil soared after the U.S. announced sanctions on Russia's biggest oil companies, threatening supplies from one of the world's top producing countries. Brent rallied more than 5% to trade near $66 a barrel, headed for the biggest jump since the start of the Israel-Iran conflict on June 13th. The U.S. blacklisted Russian oil giants Rosneft and Lukoil, sparking concern that key buyer India will walk away from dealings with Moscow. The step comes at a time when global supply looks plentiful as nations inside and outside of OPEC Plus producer alliance ramp up output amid signs of cooling demand growth. If India does drastically cut purchases, senior refinery executives said the restrictions would make it all but impossible for flows to continue. The question will become whether China is willing to step in to fill the void. I'm sure they will. To be sure, Russia has plenty of experience in skirting sanctions, and their ultimate impact isn't yet clear. The country's seaborne crude shipments recently hit a 29-month high. That's despite the slew of Western restrictions. The Rosneft-backed Indian refiner Nayara Energy, for one, could remain an outlet for the country's barrels. Still, the penalties mark a shift in President Trump's approach to Russia and open the door for tougher sanctions down the road, which could ultimately impact Russian oil flows, said Warren Patterson, head of commodity strategy at ING Group. The uncertainty is how effective these sanctions will be and what impact they actually have on exports. And if you look at the oil chart this morning, guys, the market is saying these are going to have an impact. The two-day surge in oil, actually pretty significant if you zoom in a little bit here. I mean, over the last 2 days, we've gone from, what, $57 a barrel to as high as $62. So, you know, nearly a $5 move in the price of oil over 2 days. That is very significant, but it's also worth pointing out. Let's zoom out on this chart, shall we? Let's zoom way out on this chart to go back to, like, 2020. Now, you can see here, you know, we hit these big highs after the initial invasion in Ukraine. We were up here around $125 a barrel. We dumped 100 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That brought the price of oil down, and we've kind of been grinding lower ever since. Now, the market is worried about this supply glut as we're kind of in the middle of this band. Are these sanctions enough to reverse this multi-year downtrend? I don't think so, especially not when the world is already oversupplied by up to 2 million barrels per day. And the IEA is saying up to 4 million barrels a day next year if some of these production increases come through. But for now, oil is moving higher. We'll see how effective these sanctions are in the long term. Looking over at Tesla's earnings this morning, Tesla profit tumbles as costs undermine record EV sales. This one in Bloomberg, Tesla's profit plunged despite a record quarter of vehicle sales, reflecting ongoing strains on the automotive business that CEO Elon Musk is shifting the focus away from. Musk spent much of Tesla's third quarter earnings call discussing ambitious but opaque initiatives, including humanoid robot and artificial intelligence programs, and also pleaded with investors to back his $1 trillion compensation package. Yeah, you know, what's $1 trillion between friends? But he offered few details about how Tesla will revive its core business selling electric vehicles after a 40% drop in operating profit. Whoops, we forgot to make money. Adjusted earnings dropped to 50 cents a share in the third quarter, down 31% from a year ago, the company said on Wednesday. Analysts had expected 54 cents on average in estimates compiled by Bloomberg, so we got a miss on the bottom line despite some really good record revenue. The results extended a string of weaker than expected profit to four straight quarters, showing that the company isn't immune to the rising costs buffeting the auto industry as President Trump dramatically reshapes U.S. policy. Tesla's operating expenses soared 50% to $3.4 billion in the quarter, with tariff costs exceeding $400 million. That's pretty crazy there, the $400 million tariff cost, because Tesla is arguably the least exposed to tariffs of all U.S. automakers. Tesla does more manufacturing in the States on a percentage of the vehicle basis than any other U.S. automaker, and still they took a $400 million hit from tariffs. I'm guessing that's a yearly hit, not quarterly, but they didn't specify in the article. Musk has repeatedly outlined a future built around AI, robots, and self-driving technology, a vision that's convinced investors to bid up the stock, but the timeline to develop these businesses and costs associated with building them out are coming under greater scrutiny. And Tesla offered a few details in its latest report. Trust me, bro, the robots are coming. The market's realizing Tesla trades like an AI platform, but reports like a car maker, said Harris Khurshid, Chief Investment Officer at Karabar Capital. Tesla stock not looking so hot this morning, down 3.4%, trading at $424. That's off by about 14 bucks ahead of the opening bell. Tesla is just modestly positive for the year now. It was up 8.7% year to date, but this loss this morning is going to take a big chunk out of that. And remember, guys, you know, their earnings down, what, 31% year over year. Take a look at the PE they're trading at. They're trading at 262 times earnings. When you're trading at a multiple like that, you better be growing. They're not. So, all right, you can believe this shit about AI and robots, or you can look at the numbers and say this company doesn't make any sense. Well, Tesla's never really made any sense. Tesla has always been about the story and about the future. And as long as people continue to buy into that for some reason, Tesla will continue to trade at these ridiculous valuations. Meanwhile, we got IBM reported great numbers here. Tops third quarter estimates and lifts the guidance, but the stock drops. I guess investors wanted better. IBM reported third quarter results that topped Wall Street estimates and lifted guidance, citing ongoing artificial intelligence tailwinds. Well, of course they did. Still, the stock dropped about 6% in extended trading. Revenue increased 9% from $15 billion in the year ago period, IBM said. The company reported net income of $1.74 billion or $1.84 a share after recording a loss of $330 million or 36 cents a share a year earlier. Those last year results were impacted by a $2.7 billion pension settlement charge. Clients globally continue to leverage our technology and domain expertise to drive productivity in their operations and deliver real business value with AI. Yeah, even though the MIT study says 95% of the companies are not getting any real business value with AI, but hey, the CEO said a thing. IBM upped its revenue guidance and said it now expects more than 5% revenue growth. That's up from at least 5% revenue growth. Okay, we're kind of splitting hairs here now. Free cash flow for the year is expected to hit $14 billion, up from 13.5 last quarter. Krishna also said the company's AI book of business has surpassed $9.5 billion, up from $7.5 billion during the second quarter. All right, all those numbers look good. They're moving in the right direction, but market no likey. IBM stock down 8.2% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $264.50. Now, IBM stock up 30% year-to-date might have something to do with this sell-off. If you're going to move like that, you better keep reporting blowout numbers. And even when you do, sometimes your stock sells off anyway. Meanwhile, Volvo ripping this morning. Sweden's Volvo Cars on track for best trading day ever as profit tops expectations. We haven't had much good news in the auto market, so here's some. Sweden's Volvo Cars on Thursday posted stronger than expected third quarter profit, prompting shares to rally by around 40% and putting the stock on track for its best ever trading day. Volvo, which is owned by China's Geely Holdings, posted operating income for the July-September period of 6.4 billion Swedish kroner. That's about $680 million, well above analyst expectations and up from 5.8 billion kroner a year earlier. Volvo Cars announced 3,000 job cuts and withdrew its financial guidance earlier in the year, citing tariff pressure and robust competition in the electric vehicle market. So there was a little bit of negativity in this name heading into these earnings. They cut 3,000 jobs. The cost cuts drive their profits higher. And look, the stock just exploded, up 34%. Now, this is priced in Swedish kroner, 30.55 kroner. I don't know what you call a fraction of a kroner. Is it a cent or whatever? But that is a big move for a big car company, 34% in a day, trading like a meme stock here. All right, I said we had some good news for the car industry. That was it. Now back to your regularly scheduled automotive doom. Nexperia warns Japanese automakers supply is not guaranteed. More fallout from the Dutch government seizing that chip maker. Nexperia notified its Japanese automotive customers that it may no longer be able to guarantee supply, triggering renewed concern about upheaval at the Dutch chip maker snarling global supply chains. The Japanese Automobile Manufacturers Association said on Thursday the auto parts makers received the warning about supply from Nexperia, and its members are now working to mitigate any disruption. Nexperia provides a key component, and any shortages would have repercussions for Japanese automakers, JAMA said. Japanese automakers, in particular Nissan, already on the ropes here. Those guys don't need any more bad news, so this is one more problem for them to deal with. The Dutch government seized control of Nijmegen-based Nexperia. I'm sure I butchered that pronunciation, but I digress. Earlier this month, in an unprecedented step intended to secure European access to the components made by the company. How's that going? Owned by Chinese parent Wingtech Technology, the chipmaker is now in conflict with its China unit, which today said its business continues to be orderly and remains in compliance with Chinese regulations. The rift, which was precipitated by the U.S. threatening to put Nexperia on a no-trade list due to its association with Wingtech, has turned the company into a flashpoint for the U.S.-China trade war and now threatens the broader automotive supply chain. So more implications of the trade war here affecting European and Japanese automakers. I'm sure this is going to affect U.S. automakers one way or another. Problems keep piling up in the auto space. All right. This one's got me scratching my head this morning. Honestly, I just don't get it. Trump administration in talks to take equity stakes in quantum computing firms. Why? All right, if you could summarize my reaction to this, just why? Why? We've asked the question. Now let's move on. Several quantum computing companies are in talks to give the Commerce Department equity stakes in exchange for federal funding, a signal that the Trump administration is expanding its interventions in what it sees as critical segments of the economy. Quantum computing is not a critical segment of the economy. It just ain't. Sorry. It's a new thing. It's the shiny new thing. It's the next bubble. Silicon Valley is going to blow up once AI is exposed, but it ain't critical. Companies including Ionic, Rigetti Computing, and D-Wave Computing are discussing the government becoming a shareholder as part of agreements to get funding earmarked for promising technology companies, according to people familiar with the matter. Other companies such as Quantum Computing Inc. and Atom Computing are considering similar arrangements. The funding for quantum computing companies would be one of the first significant signs of support for the sector from Washington. Quantum computers are seen as critical next generation technology because they can quickly perform computations that would take today's computers eons. That sort of advance could make it easier to find new drugs, materials, and chemicals while making every segment of the economy more efficient, experts say. Repeating the same shit they told us about AI for the last 3 years, but I digress. Let's see. What are they? They're talking about where the funding would come from. The funding the companies are seeking comes from the CHIPS Research and Development Office, which Lutnick has reorganized under his overhaul of how the agency manages 2022 CHIPS Act funding. He recently clawed back several billion dollars from a tech research initiative funded by the Biden administration. So I guess that's where they're planning to get the money. This would be CHIPS Act money to go for it. Now, just throwing a monkey wrench in this whole story, right before I went live, my moderator, Mish, spotted this one. Thank you, Mish, from Unusual Wales, saying, breaking, a U.S. Commerce Department official has told Reuters that the department is not currently negotiating with any of the quantum computing companies. All right, so take that what you will. Is this, you know, the Trump administration saying a thing and then saying another thing? Is this an anonymously sourced article proving not to be true, thus fake news? We don't know. There's a lot of anonymously sourced crap going on here, but the Commerce Department for now seems to be denying this story. But look, we've got shares of Ionic. The opening bell has rung up 8% after the opening bell here, trading $59.90, up more than $4. Rigetti Computing, that's another big name in the quantum space. They're up $3.50 or almost 10%, 9.7% higher, trading at $39.53. So the quantum stocks, the next shiny new thing that Silicon Valley and Wall Street will try to build a bubble around, they are ripping this morning. All right. I promised you guys more isolated events. And here we go. We've got lots of isolated events this morning. There's so many isolated events, we're practically giving them away. Lloyd's downgrades guidance as motor finance scandal bites. And when I heard this story, I was like, oh, wow, did First Brands and Tricolor reach across the pond to the UK? No, this is a different motor finance scandal. Apparently, this is all the rage in the UK right now. Lloyd's Banking Group, third quarter profit fell by 36%, it said on Thursday, and it downgraded its performance guidance for the year to reflect an £800 million, that's about $1 billion, charge that it had announced after a motor finance scandal. The bank reported pre-tax profit for the July-September period of £1.17 billion, broadly in line with analyst forecasts of £1 billion. The motor finance scandal, which has forced the banking industry to set aside sums to compensate consumers who were missold car financing deals, distracted from what was otherwise a reasonable quarter. Underlying net interest income rose 6% in the first 9 months versus the same 2024 period as the group's banking net interest margin rose. And this motor finance scandal, I've heard a few things about this. I haven't read very closely, but they're basically saying the auto industry in the UK and the banks were doing some kind of predatory lending. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is people were irresponsible with how they borrowed. Either way, apparently the onus is on the banks to make this right now. And Lloyd's is taking a big hit because of these missold cars. Somebody tell me, what the hell is a missold car? I just don't know what that is. But it's making a big deal for Lloyd's of London. Another isolated event going on this morning. Eagle Bancorp posts a steep Q3 loss and disappoints expectations. Shout out to Kristen Shaughnessy on Twitter who spotted this one. Excellent catch here. Eagle Bancorp took a heavy $67.5 million loss last quarter as write-downs and loan issues dragged results far below analyst estimates. Eagle Bancorp shocked markets by reporting a $67.5 million loss last quarter, falling well below expectations and putting the regional lenders' vulnerabilities front and center. Wall Street thought Eagle Bancorp would lose around $4 million, but the actual results were far worse. The main issue, the bank wrote down a big chunk of its office loan portfolio after internal reviews raised red flags about property values. In other words, this thing we've been talking about for years on this channel, how all these banks and institutions are holding these buildings on their books at valuations that are totally divorced from reality. They're all just pretending. We can see when these buildings actually sell that they're not worth a fraction of what they're claiming. Well, it finally caught up with Eagle Bancorp. While its net interest income nudged up 1% to $68.15 million, non-interest income fell sharply thanks to $3.6 million in loan sale losses and $2 million in securities losses. Eagle tried to clean up its books by charging off bad loans and trimming non-performing assets by $95.5 million, a move aimed at reducing future headaches but also revealing some serious underlying risk. With little guidance for what's next, investors are left weighing cautious optimism. Analysts mostly still call the stock a buy against ongoing uncertainty. Well, let's see what that stock, which is rated a buy, is doing today. Oh, it's down 10%. We got the opening bell rang. Let's refresh this, get an accurate mark. Yep. Eagle Bancorp down 9.96%, trading at $17.45, off by almost $2. Now, guys, they reported a $67.5 million loss. This bank has a market cap of just $500 million. So, yeah, that 10% drop, that is in line with the destruction of capital at this bank. And we don't really know how much more is coming. They took a $93 million charge off for those CRE loans. Is there going to be another one next quarter? I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And I just freaking love this story. AI-powered CLO investor built an outsized First Brands position. Who says the perfect headline doesn't exist? You gotta love this. Money manager Anthelion Capital Partners had an unusually concentrated position in loans of now bankrupt car parts supplier First Brands, a blow for an investor that had touted the ability of its AI-driven platform to pick up on subtle market signals. Well, you missed those subtle market signals. Anthelion, as of last month, owned $5 million of First Brands debt as part of a roughly $400 million investment vehicle known as a collateralized loan obligation. All right, it's a small position, $5 million out of $400. That still stings. Since then, the company has fully sold out of its position in First Brands debt, probably for pennies on the dollar. Anthelion had previously promoted the ability of its artificial intelligence platform to detect market signals other investors may miss. How's that going? The firm's use of large language models allows it to scour data, such as companies, customers, and suppliers, among other areas. Co-founders Najafov and Iwa Kozic told Bloomberg in July. In retrospect, Anthelion's appetite for the car parts supplier's debt underscores that artificial intelligence is hardly infallible. Yup, hardly infallible. Another way to put that is that it's wrong as often as it's right. And, you know, hey, these guys were out there bragging about how good their chatbot CLO investor was, and it bought a bunch of First Brands crap, and now their investors are losing money. It's almost like giving chatbots money to invest is a bad idea. Weird. We got another one here, another isolated event. Investor behind Zions and Western Alliance bad loans is tied to $270 million in troubled debt. this dirtbag in Southern California went and borrowed money from every bank under the sun using the same buildings as collateral. Gotta love this. I guess the chatbots didn't catch that one either. A little-known California real estate investor behind bad loans disclosed by Zions Bancorp and Western Alliance also faces lawsuits by Bank of California and two other lenders with his involvement in troubled debt totaling around $270 million, court filings show. In separate actions between April and August, Bank of California, Enterprise Bank and Trust, and NanoBank all sued the investor, Andrew Stupin, seeking to collect on loans worth a combined $108 million. That is on top of what we learned last week about Zion Bank and Western Alliance and their exposure to this same guy. Stupin, a longtime California real estate investor, owns a high school football team, might have more to say about that in the future, is listed as a guarantor on loans and is one of the defendants in those cases. PMF CA REIT, a real estate investment firm, has also sued Stupin and others to recover nearly $7 million, the filings show. Everybody's suing this a-hole. An attorney for Stupin said the Western Alliance claims against his client were unfounded and misrepresented the facts. What about the claims from the four other banks and the REIT that's also suing your client? Are those also unfounded? Are these isolated events, Mr. Attorney? Enterprise, Nano, and Bank of California declined to comment. Jennifer Tullius, a lawyer representing PMF, said her client had no comment. Lots of no comments. The lawsuits shine new light on surprise disclosures last week after Zions and Western Alliance that spooked markets, with investors already on edge after the bankruptcies of U.S. auto parts supplier First Brands and car dealership Tricolor. You guys starting to notice a pattern yet? It's almost like there's fraud freaking everywhere. And if you don't believe me, we've got another one this morning. Shout out to FC Nightingale on Twitter, aka Nightingale Associates, posted this one. Bankrupt telecom business accused of fraud in receivables financing. There is almost no coverage of this anywhere in the press. It's all being hidden behind paywalls and these obscure legal websites for now. But I was able to confirm that this bankruptcy did happen. Good coverage, Mr. Nightingale. A New York telecommunications business placed its financing units into bankruptcy after lenders alleged it fabricated accounts receivable that were used as loan collateral. Carrix Capital and BB Capital SPV LLC, two affiliates of Carrix Capital, have filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in New York. The filings logged late Monday reveal staggering liabilities ranging between $500 million and $1 billion. Underscoring the depth of the financial turmoil engulfing the company. This is a big one, guys. This is almost as big as Tricolor or First Brands. I think they were like $1 and $2 billion a piece. This is between $500 million and $1 billion. So I think we're probably going to be hearing more about this one. It's just the press is a little slow to catch on. Mr. Nightingale was way ahead of him, though. Lenders sued Bankim Brombat in August, alleging that his business fabricated receivables using forged contracts and fake emails. Oh, collateral fraud. There's another isolated instance of collateral fraud. How about that? Broadband Telecom and BridgeVoice, closely held corporate affiliates that provide voice termination services, filed for bankruptcy back in August after lenders accused the business of faking receivables that didn't exist. So these guys created fake contracts and fake invoices, used those to borrow money from banks. And then I guess the company went bankrupt back in August. Now their affiliates, their financing arms, are also filing for bankruptcy. Up to $1 billion has been lost here. Some bank somewhere is going to take this hit. Now, this is a New York firm, so I'm guessing it'll be New York banks, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Another isolated event that is going to have fallout in the banking system. And these are just piling up, guys. Every day, there's another one. But hey, remember, isolated events. You know, don't worry. I'm just a doomer, a rando. What do I know? Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Ash Walton, who says, Nexperia. So the shortage Netherlands tried to prevent, they caused. Ah, interesting. Isn't that like a little bit of a butterfly effect? Law of unintended consequences, something like that? See, Volkswagen stoppage is coming. We reported on that earlier this week that Volkswagen was saying they may have to stop production. Now we got this Nexperia warning to the Japanese, so we may have Japanese automakers may have to stop production. By the way, guys, production halts That means fewer new cars hitting the market, another chip shortage like 2021. This could push car prices higher at a time when people already can't afford cars, when car dealerships are going bankrupt, some because of fraud, some not. So yeah, this next barrier thing could make this problems in auto finance even worse. Hashtag incompetence. You know, is this incompetence or is this just the inevitable? It could be. That's one way to put it. Another way to put it is there is no painless way to divorce from China. All the data suggests we're going to be shooting at each other within 2 years. So sooner or later, all of these breakups are going to happen anyway. There's no easy way to do it. Maybe the trade war is just ripping the Band-Aid off. Maybe it's starting it so it doesn't happen all at once in 2027 when the missiles start crossing the Taiwanese Strait. I don't know. But yeah, they're definitely causing the shortage they were trying to prevent. It's hard to look at what's happening and argue with that, Ash. You're right on the money. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. By the way, I don't have the image ready, but right before this sign-off a few days ago, my friend Nashville Pasta Man posted a super chat. It didn't show up in my feed, but he mentioned that it wasn't – the quote was, it's not a liquidity problem, it's a collateral problem. And that was a very intuitive comment, Pasta Man. Thank you for sending that. I don't have it to throw up on the screen right now. I should. What we're seeing with a lot of these isolated events, in particular Tricolor, First Brands, and now this telecom company, CarrieX in New York, all three of those involved collateral fraud, people borrowing against the same thing at multiple banks. That's also the same thing going on with that dirtbag in Southern California, that Andrew Stupin. And, you know, he borrowed against the same commercial real estate buildings from several banks. It's the same thing Archegos did. And I remember when I was talking to Lox Ganapathy after I first heard about Tricolor and the multiple collateral pledgings, and she comes back and she texted me right away and said, yup, everybody does that. And I remember just saying, thinking to myself, oh shit, everybody does that? Well, everybody's got a problem now. And that was about a month ago, and the hits just keep on coming. So, you know, how long until the banks decide there's too much of this going on out there? I'm not going to lend anymore. I'm not going to buy any more asset-backed securities that are made up of these dog shit loans and car finances. And then the company's dependent on that securitization for liquidity to keep issuing more loans and doing more business. What happens to them? There is absolutely a credit crisis in the making here. And the financial press, as always, is doing their job of sell-side research, reassuring everybody that there's nothing to see here. Move along. Just go buy AI stocks. Well, we don't do that here. Thanks again, Pasta Man, and I'm sorry I missed that chat. And hey, look, Pasta Man is back again. He said, missold is UK's goodwill impairment charge. All right, creative terms for we made loans we shouldn't have. Missold. You know, that's like the person saying, oh, I misspoke. Oh, you mean you lied? No, I misspoke. It's the same freaking thing, isn't it? Misspoke. You know, sometimes you get your wires crossed, right? Like sometimes you mean to say something increase, but you accidentally say decrease. You were thinking increase, but decrease came out. That's a misspeak. Sure, you can afford this car. I know you can't, but here's the loan anyway. Is that a missold or is that a fraud? Is that a predatory lend? Is that a, I'm going to make this loan that I know the borrower can't pay back, but it's okay because it's only going to reside on my books for a month before I securitize that shit and sell it to some guy's pension fund? Is that fraud? Probably. Good point there, Pasta Man. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Times two for those two and the one I missed the other day. Chris Bott, what's going on, brother? He says AI is highly infallible, but its equities are highly inflatable. I see what you did there. They sound the same, but don't they just mean two different things? Guys, this AI bubble is going to burst, right? We're right now, like, think about, take a step back from the AI bubble. And everybody pretty much realizes Sam Altman's full of shit now, right? Everybody except Martin Shkreli. Everybody else will admit, you know, Martin and the Shkrelians will say they're the little subspecies of humanity that exists in his little Discord server, whatever they do. But everybody knows now that Sam Altman's full of shit. Everybody knows that the AI bubble is inflated by round tripping. They're all admitting it now. And yet it's still going on. Why is it still going on? Because they found a new way to finance it. They're using private credit to finance it now, which means it's your 401k and it's your IRA that is now paying for these data centers that everybody knows burns money and has no path to profitability whatsoever. Understand, well, like, what's going on right now. This is the combination of the AI bubble and President Trump's executive order on alternative assets. It is now us who is financing this ridiculous incineration of capital. It's our retirements that's going up in smoke. Look no further than that story yesterday about Blue Owl Capital and their $27 billion deal with Meta to build their data center. Why? Because Meta has fully exhausted their free cash flow. By the way, your 401ks and your IRAs are probably in Meta and Microsoft stock, whether you realize it or not. So when this AI bubble bursts, not only are the biggest shares in the 60 of your 60-40 portfolio going to go down, but also whatever percentage of the 40 in bonds that they put into private credit, that's going to go down too. That's why I get so upset about this story. Anyways, thank you very much, Chris Bott, for supporting the channel. Metal Seer, what's going on, brother? He says, will foreign central banks eventually own more gold reserves than U.S. treasuries? Gold is about three-quarter U.S. treasuries now, I read. I can't speak to about three-quarters of U.S. treasuries. And there's about 38 trillion of U.S. treasuries out there. I don't know what the global market cap of gold is. That's not something I typically follow. I believe China has more gold than U.S. treasuries now. China has been selling down their U.S. treasury stockpile from like 1.6 trillion 10 years ago. I think they're under 800 billion now. And China has also been buying gold hand over fist. Look, I don't know, will they eventually own more gold reserves than U.S. treasuries? It's guaranteed according to history, right? Every fiat currency in history has gone to zero eventually, except the few that currently exist today, which will eventually all go to zero. They all do. There is not one fiat currency that has ever survived because the temptation for governments to debase their currency is just too much. Sooner or later, irresponsible people take power, stay in power, and do what we have, you know, do what we've been doing. So yeah, eventually it's guaranteed to happen. Will we live to see it? Maybe, probably. The seizing of Russian assets certainly didn't help. The de-dollarization only accelerated when that happened after the Ukrainian invasion. Look, we don't know what the global monetary order is going to look like after World War III, which sadly looks increasingly inevitable. It's probably going to start in 2027. Hopefully it'll be short, but we don't know what the global monetary order is going to look like. But typically, the world reserve currency doesn't change without some kind of massive conflict. And it looks like that conflict starts in about 2 years here. So yeah, very, I'd say highly likely, Metal Seer. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Mr. Frank, thank you for being a Melonhead member for 7 months. He said, could world central banks give gold a high value liquid asset status if the dollar continues to decline? High value liquid asset status. You capitalize that. I'm not entirely sure what I can see what high value liquid asset would mean. And gold is a high value liquid asset, but you capitalize that. I'm guessing that's like a proper noun or a term, a definition I'm not entirely familiar with. I can extrapolate what it means. I would say probably gold is already a tier one asset, according to Basel III anyway. I think gold is going to become increasingly important as a share of global reserves, both central banks and private banks. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're sitting on $4,000 gold here. Everybody can see what's coming. They can read the writing on the wall, you know, that except the stock bros who are just piling into AI stocks. They don't read the writing on the wall. They just smear shit on the wall thinking it's a brown crayon and say, look what I drew, Ma. But anyway, yes, I would say that is highly likely that central banks would give it high value liquid asset status. Thank you very much, Nashville Pasta Man. Oh, thanks again. What was the name of Frank? Thank you again, Frank. Nashville Pasta Man says, Mindy McCready sold her publishing before coming to Nashville. She had hit and sold that same publishing a second time to Warner. By then, she was broke. So she sold her company twice. Boy, that's great. Be able to sell the same company twice. How do I get that arrangement? So she sold her publishing company before coming to Nashville. She had a hit and sold that same publishing a second time to Warner. By then she was broke. You know, I'm not familiar with that. I'm guessing this is a record deal. I'm having a little trouble following the comment here. Did she sell the same thing twice and commit fraud, or did she sell it and then make another hit and then sell that one? Either way, she's broke. That's a rough business you're in, Pasta Man. I tell you, the music business, the entertainment business, that seems brutal. Maybe I'm in the wrong line of work. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate that very much. Thank you, everybody. You wonderful Melonheads for having your coffee with us this morning. Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the algorithm. Thank you so much, guys, for the super chats and my generous, magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below to all that good stuff, should you feel so inclined. I'm off. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small. can dream big.